This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Clay Aiken trades his songs for stump speeches as he officially announces his entrance into the race for the 2nd Congressional District. Will he be the Democratic choice? His announcement video is aimed directly at the incumbent Republican Renee Elmers.
This is what's wrong with Washington, that a congresswoman would go there and vote against the best interests of North Carolina military families and those who depend on the military for their jobs. To do it when you know it's wrong is even worse. And to do it because your national party told you to, well, that's what, in the end, convinced me that if I didn't try to do something about it, then I couldn't complain if no one else did. I'm not a politician. I don't ever want to be one. But I do want to help bring back, at least to my corner of North Carolina, the idea that someone can go to Washington to represent all the people, whether they voted for you or not.
Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us now, as he does regularly, to talk about North Carolina politics. Welcome back, Ken.
Hi, Frank.
So, Ken, there's Clay Aiken kind of skipping ahead. He's assuming his competition is Renee Elmers, but there still are challengers for the Democratic Party. What are his chances?
Well, you know something. I mean, first of all, I mean, yes, there is a battle in the Democratic primary in May. And, of course, I think no matter who emerges from that primary would be an underdog against Renee Elmers. But Clay Aiken does have the chance of making history, and I think that's what's so remarkable about this race.
How so?
Well, he would be the first I just checked this before I got on the show, but he would be the first member of Congress in history, as far as I know, who was ever licked by a giraffe.
But that's only because that's public knowledge. You don't know how many of those men and women.
Well, that's true. That's a very good point. There's a lot of rumors about Mike Crapo in Idaho, but you know, we don't know about that for sure. No, that's a good point. But you know something, I mean, look, he's getting the national. I've gotten several phone calls and said, "Oh my goodness, did you hear about Clay Aiken?" Of course, I said, "Frank and I have been talking about this for weeks." And it's interesting, and this is a solid Republican district. Romney won it with 58%. But the thing is, what Renee Elmers is doing, I still think is making a mistake. You can attack him for whatever, although it's hard to attack him for anything because he hasn't said anything yet. But to say that her top staffer said that his political views, whatever they are, but his political views are more closely resemble San Francisco than Sanford.
Uh-oh.
Why go there? Why stoop to that level when you can, you know, you have a solid conservative district? You don't have to worry about things like that. But when you get it personal like that, and everybody knows what the San Francisco reference is about, I think you're just making a mistake.
Well, but you may have answered your own question. I mean, it is a solid red district. Aiken is out as gay, and so she wants to make sure that everybody in her district knows that, because it does make a difference in a red district, right? I mean.
Well, I think that's true, but I mean, look, you could talk about. I just think you could do it without snide comments. You could say that he's out of the mainstream. I mean, he supports same-sex marriage when the district and the state voted overwhelmingly, against same-sex marriage. So you can go that way. But when you just do a little cutesy little lines like that,
yeah.
I think it just demeans her and demeans the process.
Well, and the filing for this race is not until Monday, so he's not an official candidate yet, although he's certainly announced his interest. And this is something that, Ken, only you would know, but this is an important day in North Carolina history.
Well, it is, in the sense that on one of the most amazing, most memorable and significant Senate races in history was 1984 between Governor Jim Hunt and Senator Jesse Helms. It was on this day in 1984 that the filing deadline had come and gone. And so, of course, Helms and Hunt were the two candidates that came out of it. But, you know, they spent $25 million on their campaign back then, which now doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it was unbelievable back then. And it was just so nasty, so personal. And so when we always talk about the how ugly politics has become, boy, that 1984 race between Helms and Hunt was up there.
Yeah, it is an important race, of course, and still it remains so historically, but only you would know the filing deadline. I encourage you to read Ken's book, Filing Deadlines in American History. It's a fascinating read. Listen, Ken, let's talk about Kay Hagan's race, because now the conservative organization Freedom Works endorsed Kerry Doctor Greg Brannon for the U.S. Senate seat that's currently held by the Democrat Kay Hagan. And we've talked about that large field of GOP contenders in that race. Does getting the endorsement from Freedom Works help Brannon, who identifies as a Tea Partier?
Well, it does, and it says a lot about Tom Tillis, because nationally, every Republican thinks that Tom Tillis will be the Republican nominee against Kay Hagan. And, of course, you know, the polling shows it. The money he's raised shows it, too. But he doesn't show up anymore. He's so concerned. He realizes that if he appears at these forums and these debates and appears with the other five Republicans, including Brannon and Mark Harris, who was endorsed by Mike Huckabee, then he'll have to move so far to the right that he won't be able to move back to the center for November, when he'll need those independents and centrists. That was the old Mitt Romney problem in 2012, running way to the right in the primary, then trying to recapture the middle in the general, and it didn't help. So, yes, I mean, there are other candidates out there, but I think there's a frustration with Tillis that he seems to be, look, I'm inevitable. I don't have to worry about my fellow Republicans. I'm going after Kay Hagan. But other Republicans say, well, if you ignore us, you do so at your own peril. And, of course, that primary is coming up on May 6th.
Well, and Brannon's candidacy, it seems to me, points to another rift. We talk about the Tea Party rift versus mainstream Republicans, but Freedom Works is a Tea Party-based organization that supports Brannon in this primary. But the Tea Party seems split in this particular race, right?
Yes, and that's, as I say, that's good. That's good news for Tillis. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why he's staying out, because you have Brannon, and of course he's backed by the Tea Party, and he's backed by these new groups. He's backed by Rand Paul, who is the Tea Party darling around the country. But then again, as I said, you have the Reverend Mark Harris, who's backed by other so-called pro-family groups, backed by Mike Huckabee. So even, you know, there are a lot of primaries around the country where the Tea Party has focused on a candidate to oppose an establishment opponent. But in this case, the Tea Party itself is not speaking with one voice, and that's not good for the conservative element of the party.
So whoever wins that primary will face the incumbent, Kay Hagan. National Journal ranked North Carolina senator as Kay Hagan as the nation's most moderate. Wow. Is that good?
You know, First of all, National Journal ratings are always kind of funny. They always pick certain votes that you take. I mean, for years, Ron Paul was always one of the most moderate Republicans. Mm. He was, because he was in the middle, because he voted against some of the conservative stuff on foreign policy and things like that. So I don't know what to make of this. I saw that now, look, the Republicans will point out that she voted with Obama 96% of the time, and that's the number that Tillis is using in his commercials. But if you look at these numbers, Rand Paul is the 19th most conservative. Elizabeth Warren is the 31st most liberal. So I don't even know what to make of these numbers. But, of course, being called a moderate and saying that, look, I work with Democrats and Republicans is a very good tactic for Kay Hagan to take.
Well, it might be. Everybody wants to be a moderate, and every voter says they're moderates. But when it comes down to it, everybody is so utterly polarized that, you know, if you really are a moderate, it means nobody's voting for you, I think, doesn't it?
And you wonder about that. Of course, you don't want to be a moderate facing a Republican primary, and Kay Hagan does not have a Democratic primary. But sometimes there are the progressive wings of the party that want you to be more committed. I mean, they love Elizabeth Warren for that reason, because she stands up for them. Now, you can't be a left-wing progressive in a state like North Carolina, but there are some people in the Democratic primary in the party that say, gee, I wish Kay Hagan were not standing up against President Obama as much as she has been, even though Republicans say, well, no, she's going in lockstep with President Obama.
Ken, let's take a look at the farm bill that finally passed. What changes does that bring for the state of North Carolina?
Well, you know something, I have not gone through those details as much state by state, but I mean, of course, clearly what it does do is that there are tens of thousands of people who are relying on food stamps, and those numbers have been cut drastically. Of course, Democrats say they've been cut drastically. Conservatives say they have not been cut enough. But you know, there are farmers and there are subsidies and there are things like that that are being protected. But the bottom line is that many hundreds of thousands of people around the country, obviously affected North Carolina as well, who will be losing anywhere from $90 a month and up in food stamps. And that's, you know, if you have to decide between whether to eat and pay your rent, that's a very tough choice.
Well, what does it say about politics nationally, Ken? We see that food stamps are cut pretty easily. We see the Senate once again refusing to extend unemployment benefits. The House saying even if that bill had passed, the one that they had been working on, no way would it have made it through the House. It seems that there is no political price to pay for working against working people. There was a time when that used to be a constituency and you had to be a little more careful. What's happening politically?
Well, that's a good question, because, I mean, think of the immigration bill, for example. The Senate passed it last June. The House, the Republicans seemed to indicate the other day, like a week ago, only a week ago, that, okay, we're going to do something about a path to legal status, because You know, there are 11 million people. Look, there are 11 million people here illegally. There's an immigration system that's out of whack and broken. And, you know, this is also an issue about respect. And now the headlines in the papers today are talking about, well, the Republicans probably will not entertain a bill in the House because they think it's amnesty, or the Tea Party feels that it'll divide the Republican Party when at a time when they think that they have the Democrats on the ropes over Obamacare. So many things that apparently need to be done, ostensibly need to be done, are just not getting done in the name of politics. And not too many members of Congress suffer because of it, because so many of these congressmen are in safe Democrat or safe Republican districts that they don't bear, you know, they don't have a risk of paying the price at the polls.
Very briefly, I've got about 30 seconds left. Tomorrow, the Moral March in downtown Raleigh, a sign that there is resistance building, at least in this state. Thousands expected to gather in Raleigh. A sign of a growing national movement, do you think?
It seems to be. It seems to be spreading to other southern states as well. I mean, it hasn't done much as far as changing legislation, but it is firing up a Democratic base. It's firing up minority groups, and that could mean something in the votes for the votes in November.
Ken, thanks. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie, joins us regularly here on The State of Things. Just ahead, George Zimmerman seeks a challenger for a celebrity boxing match. We'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.